All right. Exodus chapter 2. And we started last week. You can tell most of your headings in this chapter, whatever translation you have, will emphasize the birth of Moses. And so as we just get started with this, actually we haven't even gotten to Moses himself. But his parents are very important. We tried to emphasize last week that they were individuals of great faith. They saved the life of Moses. I don't know, we have no way of knowing how many little children were murdered at this particular time. Probably hundreds were cast into the river. And Pharaoh, of course, was very adamant about this situation, and his men were put in charge of all of this, and we know the midwives wouldn't do it, and so he put his own men to the task, and no doubt they did their job well. But Moses survived, and he survived because, again, of his parents and their faith. And it's just magnificent. Again, we don't know a whole lot about them, Amram and Jochebed, but, you know, one, probably most of you are, some of you at least know this, but interesting thing about them is that Jochebed actually was Amram's aunt. He married his father's sister. So anyway, that's kind of strange things that happened back in those biblical times. But anyway, they were two individuals of great faith. And really, they were just a power couple is what they were. They did a lot of good because they had faith together. And you don't really see that here in Exodus. If you go to the text again at verse 2, it says, "The woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. And when it says, verse 3, when she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket and made of bulrushes and daubed it with the pitamen and pitch. And she put the child in it and placed it among the reeds of the riverbank." And the emphasis here in Exodus is her. But it wasn't just her. Like, Amram had something to do with all of this too. I don't know why the Holy Spirit chose. The Holy Spirit did what he wanted to do. But I don't know why he didn't emphasize the fact that he was involved in this decision-making process as well. And the reason we know that is because of the inspired account of Hebrews. Remember that over in Hebrews chapter 11? Notice how it reads over here. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 23, it says this. Hebrews 11, verse 23, "By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by who?" Who was he hidden by? By his parents. It wasn't just Jochebed. He was hidden by his parents, because not just her, but not just she, but they saw that the child was beautiful, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. So this was a husband and wife working together, and that's a great example for us, isn't it? I mean, there is no more important people in the Lord's church than faithful couples who are working together, who have faith together, and carrying out God's will, living godly lives together. What a powerful example that is. And that's not to slight anyone. Those we have several who aren't married, never been married, or have been in the past but no longer, or you know, spouse has died. That, I mean, you all could do great, great, great work for the Lord. I'm not at all indicating anything otherwise. But there is something special about a husband and wife combination, that they can really serve God and do a great, great work together in the Lord. And here's one of the first power couples that we have. These two, if it wasn't for them, Moses surely would have died. He would not have survived this situation. But together they planned and plotted exactly what they were going to do to save his life. And so last week we emphasized with regard to all of that, they had a working kind of faith. So they were trusting God, but in the end, of course, God had to arrange everything. But they had to plan, and they had to provide everything. And then they just put their trust in God. They had no idea. After they put together this plan of putting Moses in a basket and put it in a particular place on the riverbank where it might be found, they could plan all of that, but they didn't know how it was going to turn out. And that's where their faith came in. They had faith that God would work it all out. And, of course, he did. And so Pharaoh's daughter comes along. Very, very possible that they knew that that's where she went to bathe. And so, but regardless of that, she comes along. Verse 5 says, now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. While her young woman walked beside the river, she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant woman, and she took it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. So it says she took pity on him. And so what an amazing thing that is. The Pharaoh's idea that he wanted all the baby boys killed, and the main one, who was going to deliver the people, well, of course, he survived, all because of the tears that he cried and the innate feelings of the woman. Pharaoh's daughter kicked in, and she just couldn't do it. It's very possible that she would take that child and just throw it in the river, or at least report it back to Pharaoh, and he certainly would have arranged for that. But she didn't do that. She was touched by the baby, and so she had pity and made arrangements. And watch how it all works out. It says at verse 7, then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you? And it's very probable that Amram and Jochebed worked this out. You know, kind of schooled Miriam in exactly. I mean, it's very hard to believe. I don't know how old Miriam was at this time, but she wasn't that old. Like, she wasn't that much older than Moses. She could have been 12, 13, something like that. Most believe she was in that range. And hard to believe that she thought of this all by herself. I'm going to follow, and then I'm going to go up to Pharaoh's daughter and ask her if she needs a nurse. And it's very possible that that was all a part of the plan. And it worked out beautifully. Because how did Pharaoh's daughter respond? She said to her, go. So the girl went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages. Like, it couldn't have worked out any better than that, could it? Again, they didn't know how it was all going to turn out. And so everything went exactly to plan. And in fact, they probably didn't anticipate that Pharaoh's daughter would even offer them wages. So now Moses' mother gets to raise Moses herself and get paid for it. How many of you parents wish you got paid for raising your children? It worked out great. And we don't know how many years this happened, but it was at least three or four, the weaning age of a child. A lot of commentaries think that she had Moses longer, more like 5 or 6 years, but we can't really be sure. But what do you think she did with Moses, even if it was just for like 4 years, the first 4 years of his life? What do you think she did with Moses? I'm not talking about the technical raising, but right. You don't think she indoctrinated him with exactly who he was and his background and all of that? And we know, as when he becomes grown, he knows exactly who he is. He knows he's a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He knows the Hebrews are his people. Knows all of that. And it's very possible. Again, some of this is conjecture, I know. There's no way we can know all the details of exactly what happened in these years, but some things are just probable, and it is very probable that after she turned Moses over to Pharaoh's daughter, that she wasn't completely cut off from him. I mean, Pharaoh's daughter doesn't know that she is his actual mother. She's just the one who nursed him. You think Pharaoh's daughter appreciated that? Of course, of course. Hard to believe that she would just completely cut her off just like that. It's probable that she allowed her to have access to Moses over the years. And if that were the case, that would explain why he knew so much about who he was and had a relationship with God and all of that. And it came from this woman who had this faith. And one way or the other. And so it worked out beautifully. And it says, and when the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So it says she named him Moses because she said, I drew him out of the water, which is the Hebrew word for draw out. It sounds a lot like the Moses here. And so it's what Moses probably means. So Moses is born. He survives this ordeal. And then we come to verse 11, and we have jumped forward just like that 40 years. So now we're 40 years later. And it says, one day when Moses had grown up. And that involves more than just chronological years. It certainly involves that. But he has now matured. He's become a full man. He has things together in his mind, and he knows some things now that he wants to do. And I know you think, well, 40, he should have grown up a lot before that. And yes, and again, it's not just talking about chronological years and that sort of thing. You know, sometimes even today, it might take some men, more so men than women, but it might take some men into their 30s before they figure everything out and really know what they want to do with their life and just really have it together. And some a lot sooner than that, but not always. And so, but he's 40 at this time. And when he was grown up, then it says he went out to his people and looked on their burdens. Now, we have three passages that we put together to really understand this portion of Moses' life. Again, we don't have a lot of passages on it, a lot of verses to glean from. But with what Stephen preached, you remember in Acts chapter 7, and what the Hebrew writer wrote, we can understand some things a little bit more clearly. And when it says here, he went out to his people and looked on their burden. First of all, the word look there, the Hebrew word means to look with compassion. And so he goes out there and he is checking out the situation. It doesn't mean that he hasn't seen his people for 40 years, but he hadn't spent any significant time with them. And it could very well have been his first trip to Goshen and actually see what is going on when they're under the taskmaster and doing their work. He's probably seen his brother and sister and mother in these 40 years. As I said earlier, it could have been that he saw his mother more than a little. But this is the first time that he is looking upon his people like this. And what happens? But there's a reason he's gone out there at this point. He's become full grown. And he's developing things in his mind about who he is and who he wants to be. And so he goes out there. And as he's out there, he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. So he has that connection with the Hebrews. And we'll talk more about that. Did I see a hand go up? Yeah, Paul. We know because Acts 7 tells us that. Now, how Stephen knew, that's a whole different thing. I don't know. But Acts 7 says it specifically. In fact, turn over to Acts chapter 7. And let's see here. Acts chapter 7 at verse 23. That's where. But look at verse 20. Go back to verse 20. And it says, at this time, Moses was born. And he was beautiful. He was beautiful in God's sight. And he was brought up for 3 months in his father's house. And when he was exposed, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and brought him up as her own son. Now, all of this is really kind of significant, these little details about. And look, verse 22. And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds. And so keep that in mind. Moses, he's kind of like Joseph in this regard. He has become outwardly an Egyptian. But now he has never forgotten who he was. He knows he's a Hebrew, see. And the Egyptians would know that, intellectually. But they didn't treat him like a Hebrew. He was Pharaoh's son, the daughter's son. And so he was royalty. And he was educated. He was instructed in the ways of Egypt. And we know from different things that people have discovered, and archaeologists, that the Egyptian history, back in those days, they, when it came to royals and people of high office, they were educated in a very broad, well-rounded way. Like, he would have been educated in everything from astronomy, in science, mathematics, medicine. It doesn't mean he mastered, all those things, but he'd have that kind of rounded education. And he became mighty in word and deeds. Josephus tells us that, and I can't remember the details of it, because after all, it's Josephus, and you can't always take everything he says completely. But he has suggested that Moses even fought in battles for Egypt. He even names, and this is why I can't remember, he names the people that he fought against and came. But that could be true. We don't know. The only thing we know is right here. He was mighty in words and deeds. And so if that be the case, or even if it wasn't the case, he's a royal who is well known. He's the son of Pharaoh's daughter. People know royalty. How do we treat with the royalty from England? We know anything about them? They make the news ever? Like, always. They bring up things all the time, and some think, including me, like, really? Do we need to know? Well, we don't have to know every detail of everything that happens to them. And they just, they don't even have any real power, do they? And so when you talk about royalty, they're known, well known, and they have power and prestige. And now here's Moses. He's brought up as Pharaoh's daughter's son, and he excels. He becomes mighty in word and deed. So you keep that in mind. That's who Moses is. Now, and then it's verse 23, when he was 40 years old. Now watch this. It came into his heart to visit his brothers, the children of Israel. And so this is something. He's not like, this is not just a curiosity. Like, he woke up some morning, I want to take a trip to Goshen and see exactly what goes on over there. This is something that weighed heavy on his heart. And so he goes over there, and watch, it says, and seeing one of them being wronged, he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian. Now, one of the things we find about Moses, we see it a few times here, and we see it on through the rest of his history, is that he was a fierce defender of the oppressed. And that's what these studies are about. We learn about these men and the different things that made them great. And we've said he's a great lawgiver and a great spokesman for God and all of that. He also was the kind of man who cared, had compassion, and felt it when he saw people being oppressed. And so now, but you watch what it says here, that he saw them being wrong, and he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian. And then it says, and I'll get back to that in a minute, but then it says, verse 25, he supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not understand. Isn't that interesting? Moses thought that at this time he was going to be delivering his brothers. I'm not talking about he wasn't thinking, I'm going to lead them at the Exodus. But he knew, he believed that God was putting him in position to somehow help his brethren. Only problem he had is he's acting at the wrong time. Because he's right about that. God was using him. He had the passion for the people, but what he didn't have is a precept from God. He's just acting on his own right now. And as we just read, it gets him into a little bit of trouble. Because one of the things, now with Moses, we're just studying Joseph. He wasn't like Abraham. Remember, we're studying Abraham. Abraham had his faults and flaws and things. And, you know, going over Joseph's life, what flaws did he have? We know in real life, Joseph was a sinner just like the rest of us. But so far as the narrative of his life, there wasn't anything negative, unless some commentaries believe that he had pride. That, you know, before when he got the coat and all of that, before he was thrown into the pit, he was a little prideful. Even that's debatable. But even if we give you that, that's the only negative thing ever said about Joseph. But now we come to Moses. And Moses is a great, great, great man. And in some ways greater than any other. But he had his faults and flaws. And one thing was, he didn't always control his anger. So he's looking over his people, and he sees probably the taskmaster who is abusing one of his brethren, and he does something about it purposely. He looks one way and looks the other, makes sure no one's looking, and then he murders this taskmaster. And would anybody object at that wording? Did he murder him? Absolutely. I mean, that he went too far. He let the flesh get the best of him. And now he's thinking he's somehow going to help his people, but now he has to flee. Because as we go back over here at Exodus chapter 2, and again, it says, he said that he said, when he went out the next day, because he has a plan going on here. You know, he hadn't been out there all this time. He goes one day, he goes right back the next day because he thinks it's time. God, somehow, he's going to help his people. I don't know how he thought he was going to do it. We're not told. But he's thinking God is helping him, and he thought, my brethren should know that God has given them salvation through me. But they didn't know that. And so, but he goes back the next day and he sees two Hebrews that were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, why do you strike your companion? And he answered, who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? And then Moses was afraid and thought, surely the thing is known. Now, I'll pick up there in just a minute. But again, you see what happens. Here's another practical lesson we learned from this. We have got to control ourselves in life, no matter what comes up. We can't act carnally. We can't let the flesh get the best of us. And Moses did that on more than one occasion. Remember we saw Sunday when the people were murmuring, what did he do? Took him to the rock, and what did he do? He hit the rock. Why did he do that? Yes. You know, God said it was a lack of faith, and there are a lot of factors involved, but you can read the passage, and you could just see. You know, he referred to them as rebellious, you rebellious people. And you can just feel Moses getting mad here as he goes through this process. And then he hits the rock instead of just speaking to it. Moses didn't always control himself the way he should have. Like, he wasn't a loose cannon in all, he had very few occasions, but there are times his temper got the best of him. Does our temper get the best of us sometimes? Yes, we can get in trouble, whether it's in our marriage, whether it's on the job. We sometimes let the flesh get the best of us, and pride kicks in, and we do things we shouldn't do. And there's passage after passage that tells us, you know, you need, if you walk after the flesh, you mind the things of the flesh, that leads to death. But if you mind the things of the Spirit, that leads to life. And that's what we need to do, always. No, we're going to make some mistakes in things. Sometimes the flesh will get the best of us, but we should realize we don't want that. Moses did that, and it got him in trouble. And look at what happens now. He was afraid. Surely this thing is known, he says. And now what? And when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now, this is very interesting. Pharaoh sought to kill him. That's an overreaction, don't you think? Remember, that's why I went through all of this. Who was Moses? Now, you think to yourself, well, he was a Hebrew. Matter. The Egyptians weren't viewing him as a Hebrew. They may have known intellectually that he was, but I can guarantee you Pharaoh wasn't thinking, you know, this little boy, he's just a Hebrew. That was his grandson. He raised him. His mother raised him. But you think he spent any time in the palace with Pharaoh? Of course he did. And not only that, he's exactly what royals want their children to be. He has excelled, as we saw a few moments ago. Mighty in words and deed. He no doubt made Pharaoh proud. And then he kills someone. And that wasn't unusual. There, all the time in Egypt, those who are higher ups and those who are of nobility would mistreat those commoners and sometimes even kill them. And when things would go awry, and nothing would happen to them. Pharaoh was the law. He could just turn the other way and ignore it. And he no doubt often did. Why on this occasion, when the one who is the offender is his grandson, his daughter's son, who he raised, who has reached great heights, made Egypt proud? Why, just like that, he hears, Moses has killed someone, and so he is going to die. I wonder why that kind of reaction. I know exactly why. And the Hebrew writer helps us with it. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 11. And this is the impressive thing about Moses. Hebrews chapter 11. We read verse 23 a few moments ago. But look down at verse 24. Hebrews 11 at verse 24. It says, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up. Now think about that. We remember what we were saying earlier? You flip back over there to Exodus. It say, what is it? Verse 11. One day when Moses had grown up. See, now when Moses was, same time frame that we're dealing with. When Moses was grown up, he has matured. He has developed his own thinking. He knows who he is and who he wants to be. And so when he's grown up, it says he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Some more from Josephus. Josephus tells us that Pharaoh didn't have any other children, and neither did his daughter. What did that mean about Moses? If that be true. We can't be absolutely true, but if you listen to Josephus, that's what he writes. And if it be true, then what does that mean about Moses? He's next to the throne. He's next to the throne. And that would be, he has excelled as an Egyptian. People don't view him as, later on we're going to find when he gets here to Midian and he rescues the daughters of Reuel, they go back to their father and they say, we were saved by an Egyptian. Because he looked like an Egyptian. And he dressed like an Egyptian. And he talked like an Egyptian. He was raised in Egypt. He was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He had all of that. And now the time comes. He's grown up now. Even if he was an heir to the throne, he very well could have been. But even if he wasn't, he was somebody very important. Had power and prestige and all of that. And he's grown up. He comes of age. And he says to his mother, thanks, but no thanks. I don't want to be your son. You think that has something to do with the relationship between Moses and Pharaoh? Now all of a sudden, he kills an Egyptian. And he knows, I'm in trouble. I have just told Pharaoh, I'm not interested in any position he wants me to be in. I've told his daughter, I don't want to be your son. And now this happens, and he thinks, yep, I'm going to have to get out of here. Pharaoh is going to want to kill me. And that's exactly what he did. And understanding some of that helps us to understand, even here in Hebrews, like when you just read what goes on in Exodus, if that's all you had to go by, there'd be a lot of things we don't understand. But here we find this was a decision that Moses made not to be Pharaoh's son. Why? Because he knew who he was. He was a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He was a Hebrew, and those Hebrews out there who are being mistreated, they're my people. I'm not an Egyptian. No doubt he was able to partake of all of the benefits of being Pharaoh's daughter, had all the power, the prestige, had a fine, lovely life and all of that, luxury, all that would go along with being royalty. But he comes of age. He's grown up. And he realizes now he has to make a decision who he wants to be. And his decision was to be with his people. And so, all of that is impressive. Look at it, verse 25 of Hebrews 11. It uses the word choosing. Choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. That was his choice. He could have said, and how many people would have said, when it comes, we're going to make you even greater than you've been. And he said, no, I don't want to be your son. And he chose to suffer with the people of God. That's impressive. He chose the people of God over Egypt. How many times do we choose the people of God over the world? Or maybe I should ask, how many times do we not do that? Especially when there's power and prestige and popularity and position and all of that that's involved. How many people, children of God, have been led away to the world because those things have been dangled before them? And they, being of the flesh, choose the power and the popularity. Not Moses. He made a choice. He chose to suffer with the people of God. As we go through all of this with Moses and we learn about who he is, don't ever forget that. That's who Moses is. That's the kind of man he was. He has learned, and again, I don't know to what extent, but I attribute to Amram and Jochebed. Somehow, they instilled to him. Maybe his mother did have more access to him than we actually know. But somehow, he knew about God. In fact, some of this is even hard to understand, all that he knew. Verse 26, he considered the reproach of Christ than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the He left Egypt not afraid of the anger of the king. And that probably takes us a little bit later on in the history. But he knew exactly how he wanted to live his life and who he wanted to align himself with. And he knew something about Christ. He didn't know what you know about him. But perhaps he was taught again about the seed of Abraham and all of that. And that's what he wanted to be a part of. Even though if to do that, he'd have to sacrifice all of the material things, the finer things of life. And he did it. And that's when he went out to visit his people. And then he sees all this happening, and he let his anger get the best of him. And now, all of a sudden, he has to flee. And so we'll find now he has to spend the next 40 years of his life in Midian. But it ends up being a good thing. Because while he is ready at this time, he thinks again, God, my brothers should understand, God is sending me forth to be their salvation. But he wasn't ready. He needed more training. And it wasn't time yet anyway. God has all of this on a timetable, his own timetable. Remember, the Israelites are going to spend 430 years in Egyptian bondage. It's just not time yet. So it's all going to work out according to God's plan and not Moses' idea. So as we read then, we see, and our time is just about up. I don't think the second bell has it rung yet. It did ring? Okay. We'll pick up. That's a good stopping place. We'll pick up on the next 40 years of his life. By the time he stands before Pharaoh, he'll be 80 years old. So we'll get to that next week.